Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Peter Golenbach, who is one of the most prolific baseball writers of our time and of a lot of people's times, even the generations before us. But he is out with a brand new book called Whispers of the Gods, Tales from Baseball's Golden Age, told by the men who played it. The book is available everywhere. It's a fantastic compendium of stories recounted by several men who played Major League Baseball over the years. Peter, one of the many things I loved about this book is it was not a book that you set out to write, went and did a bunch of interviews, and then put the book together. This is a compilation of really a life's work of you, right?
It's about 45 years' worth, yes.
Tell me how it came about.
Well, when I was a junior at Dartmouth, I was the sports editor of the Dartmouth paper, and I got a book in the mail sent to me, and it was called The Glory of Their Times by a man by the name of Larry Ritter, who was an economics professor at NYU. And Larry spent 3 years, traveled thousands of miles, driving across the country, interviewing players who had played in the 1910s and the 1920s. And I was just mesmerized by this book. These people were telling stories of Babe Ruth, of Ty Cobb, of Shoeless Joe Jackson. And it seemed to me that if Larry hadn't written this book, the whole era would not have been able to come alive the way he made it come alive. And I was just so enamored of this book. I've probably read it, a dozen times in my life. At any rate, so for the last, since I wrote Dynasty, which I started in 1972, I've done Dynasty and Bums was about the Brooklyn Dodgers, Wrigleyville about the Cubs, Spirit of St. Louis about the Cardinals and the Browns, and Amazing, which was about the Mets. So I probably have interviewed 200 to 250 ballplayers over those years. And a very close friend of mine was Jim Bouton, who was in the Dynasty book. And for several years, I lived in Englewood, about three blocks from him, and his family and my family were very close, and I would babysit his kids. And about 3 years ago, he got dementia, and last year he died. And I thought, what would be a good way to sort of save his memory in a way? And I thought of the book, The Glory of Their Times. I thought, well, why don't I do a sequel to that? So Jim is the first chapter in the book, how he, as a kid from New Jersey, somehow made it to the Yankees and became a star. And the last chapter was his writing Ball 4 and the opprobrium that came down on him after he wrote it. And in between that, I have interviews with people like Ted Williams and Stan Musial, Roy Campanella, Ron Santo, Phil Rizzuto, Monty Irvin, Jim Brosnan, Roger Maris, Tom Sturdivant talks about Casey Stengel and Mickey Mantle. Rex Barney, of course, talks about Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese. And in fact, during my interview with Rex Barney, he was the one who told me that several times in cities like, the cities were Cincinnati, Philadelphia, and Boston when they played the Braves, the fans would be booing Robinson. And Pee Wee Reese, from his shortstop position, would walk over to first base. Robinson started out as a first baseman, and put his arms around Jackie Robinson's shoulders in front of that crowd and absolutely silence the crowd. So that story, I eventually wrote a book called Teammates about that. But the original story came from Rex Barney in my interview in Baltimore back in the 1980s, and I put that in as well.
The way this book is it's really the players' interviews based upon your questions. You pulled your questions out of there, but we're getting them in context from the players' own words, which is not translated through any type of ghostwriter as it would be if these players had written a memoir. But, some of the stories that come out, it transcends generations. You have stories in here about people you interviewed who talked to Babe Ruth about his, did he call the shot or didn't he, right?
That's right. I lived in Englewood for a while, Englewood, New Jersey. And one day the phone rang, and hi, Peter, it's Ed Frohlich. And Ed Frohlich was the trainer for Joe McCarthy's New York Yankees in the 20s, for McCarthy's Boston Red Sox in the 40s, and also he was a trainer in the late 30s for the Brooklyn Dodgers when Babe Ruth was a coach of the Brooklyn Dodgers. And Brooklyn had hired him in the contract. It said that before every game, Ruth would take batting practice. And the idea being that, you know, fans would come to the ballpark to watch the great Babe Ruth take batting practice. So anyhow, Ed has a conversation with Babe, which I just loved. He asked Babe Ruth whether he had called his shot in the 1932 World Series against pitcher Charlie Root. And Babe says to him, Ed, can you hear me? And Ed goes, yeah. And Babe says, can you really hear me, Ed? And Ed says, yeah. And Ruth says to him, if I had pointed to center field, Charlie Root would have put that ball between my ears and killed me. So, I mean, in over the years, I've interviewed a number of people who were there that day who all said the same thing, that Ruth did not call his shot, that he was actually pointing towards third base. Mark Koenig had been a Yankee shortstop, and in 32, he had left the Yankees and gone over to the Cubs and helped the Cubs get into the World Series. And the Cubs players only gave him a half World Series share. And Ruth was furious that they had done this to his friend. And so Ruth was basically, you know, barking at the Cubs during this particular bat. And when Ruth threw the first strike, he pointed towards the Cubs dugout, as to say, strike one. And then Root threw another strike, and he pointed to the Cubs' dugout with two fingers to say, strike two. And then on the next pitch, he hit the ball into the center field stands. I mean, that's what happened. But somehow, a couple of the reporters, somehow, the way they saw it, got the notion that Root had been pointing to center field when actually he was pointing into the dugout.
And yet the legend has survived for about a century.
It sure has.
I'm chatting with Peter Golenbach about his brand new book, Whispers of the Gods, Tales from Baseball's Golden Age, told by the men who played it. It's available everywhere. It's a great baseball book and a great capture of bringing history to life for several generations of baseball fans. Peter, another thing I took out of this book is the relationship between the managers and the players. And this was back at the time when teams didn't have, you know, 10 coaches on their coaching staff, and so the relationship was a lot closer. But it seems like, and I know that you've written about the Yankees extensively, in reading about Roger Maris and reading other people's stories in this book, it seems like when Ralph Houk moved from manager to GM, that's when things started to fall apart. Is that a fair assessment?
No, that's exactly what happened. That is exactly what happened. And it was interesting because I had gone to Gainesville to find Roger. After Roger left the Yankees, he was with the St. Louis Cardinals and helped the Cardinals get to the World Series in 67 and 68. So Gussie Bush gave him a dealership, a beer distributorship in Gainesville, and I went there. And his brother made it fairly clear to me that Roger didn't want to talk to me, so it seemed. Roger was a very sort of a shy guy. He didn't like the press to begin with. So I got in my car and I drove to Atlanta, where Cleet Boyer had a bar. So Cleet had said to me, I'll meet you at 9 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. And I said, great. And so I'm sitting there at this bar drinking coffee while these large former high school football players are drinking beer. And I sat there from 9 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, waiting for Cleet to show up. I mean, what are you going to do? It makes no sense to leave. You just, you know, stay there until he arrives. Well, not only did he arrive at 9 o'clock, but he arrived with Roger Maris. Roger and he were very close friends, and Cleet was about to fly to Japan the next day, where he was going to play his last year in Japan. And so Cleet said to the two of us, you know, go sit down. I'll be over in a few minutes. And Roger and I are sort of looking at each other, and it's a little bit uncomfortable because I didn't want to say to him, can I talk to you? Because I was afraid if he said no, it would ruin the evening. But about 2 minutes later, he sort of says to me, you know, would you like to go outside and talk? And I said, boy, would I ever. And I sat on the hood of a car in the parking lot and talked to Roger for, a good hour. And he was fabulous. He was absolutely fabulous. That's the interview in this book where he talked about how hard it was for him, how emotionally difficult during the 1961 season when he broke Babe Ruth's record, that it was so bad his hair was falling out at the end of the year. He had to ask for a day off. He was upset because before every game, at least four or five reporters would say to him, do you think you can break Babe Ruth's record? And Roger would say to him, how the hell do I know? You know, something like that. And he also told me that during the 66 season, he had slid into home plate and caught his hand on the spikes of the umpire and broke his hand. And Houken and the Yankees had x-rayed him. And they didn't tell him that his hand was broken because they needed the fans. The Yankees were in last place in 1966. And they needed fans to come, and they thought Roger would be one of those who would draw fans. And so Roger was very upset by that. And at the end of the year, he said to Houk, you know, I'm quitting. I'm done. And Houk said to him, do me a favor, wait until the spring to make that announcement, and we'll have a little party for you. So Ralph said to me, you know, what difference it makes? Sure, I'll wait until the spring. And a week or two later, Ralph Houk traded him to St. Louis. And he was just furious about that. Absolutely. You know, how can you do this to me?
You can't retire then.
Yeah. So he didn't retire because he thought, oh, the Cardinal fans will hate me too. So he spent two more years playing for the Cardinals and helped them win two pennants.
Just from a pure technology standpoint, some of these interviews are 40, 50 years old that you've done in this book. And so how do you have do you still have the actual tapes from when these were done and the technology to play them now?
You bet I do. I'm 5 feet tall, but I got them. Yep.
To preserve them over the years, was there anything magical about preserving them, thinking this may come about someday?
Nothing magical. I put them in boxes. They're in the little containers, and then I put all the little containers in, big boxes.
One interview also that intrigued me here was Roy Campanella, because he had such a tragic story about the car accident and such. But when you interviewed him, I think it was a one and done that you did with him. But somebody like him would have every right to be mad about his lot in life, but I didn't take that away from the interview. Is that what you found?
No, he was the sweetest guy. He was just amazing that way. I had interviewed him. The Dodgers gave him a lifetime job as a sort of a PR guy. And so I interviewed him in the bowels of Dodger Stadium in one of the executive offices. And he's sitting in his wheelchair, and he's, paralyzed from the neck down, which is amazing. And he talked to me for an hour about his life and about Jackie Robinson. And he made no bones that he had no bitterness at all.
As you look at all of these men, some are names that are household names that you've interviewed in this book. Some are not, but every story contains names that everybody's going to recognize. You look at the Hall of Fame every year. You look at how the Hall of Fame votes and the criteria they use. Should all the people in this book be in the Hall of Fame for one reason or another?
No, not all of them. I mean, Ellis Clary I chose because he had played for the 1944 and 45 St. Louis Browns. It was the one time that the Browns made it to the World Series in 1944, since way back when. But what I loved about that was his story about Pete Gray, who was the one-armed outfielder. In 1945, the ownership decided that Pete Gray would be their center fielder. And Gray, who had one arm, hit about .217. And they had an outfielder who should have been playing, who was, far better, hit far better. And the players, as Clary told it, absolutely hated Gray. They would try to torture him if they could. They grab a dead fish somewhere and stick it in his coat pocket, you know, that sort of thing. And as a result of one of their star pitchers being thrown off the team for getting drunk and you know, doing things to Gray, the Browns didn't make the World Series in 1945. And I just thought all of that was very interesting, and I put it in.
Well, this book was just a page-turner for a baseball fan like me, and it seems like I don't know any baseball fan that isn't completely passionate. You're either all the way in or all the way out, and this book is...
Absolutely right.
This book is Whispers of the Gods, Tales from Baseball's Golden Age, Told by the Men Who Played It, by Peter Gollenbach. It is available everywhere. Peter, just a fantastic piece of history that you've brought to life here in this book, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
You're very kind, and I'm honored to be on your show. Thanks so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.